This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Adam Hochberg, in today for Frank Stacio. The Nile River provides drinking water, electricity, irrigation, and jobs for people in 11 countries. But it's also a big source of conflict. The river is long but skinny. Its water is essential to the health and economies of the nations that border it, but its water is also scarce. And that's created long-lasting political disputes among the countries that share it. In an effort to bridge some of those disputes, the Nile Project came together. They're a collective of musicians from different countries along the Nile Basin. Like the countries themselves, the project's music is a medley. It has different languages, rhythms, and scales. The Nile Project hopes their music is a launching point for conversations about the river and the conflicts along its shores. The project is in residence at North Carolina State University. The group plays a free show at 5:30 Tuesday evening, March 21st, on NC State's Stafford Commons. And we're joined in the studio by Mina Gerges, a founder of the group. He's an Egyptian ethnomusicologist. Mina, welcome.
Hi, Adam.
So this all started, I understand, when you went to Egypt in 2011, during the Arab Spring. Can you pick up the story from there?
Yeah, I mean, I went to Egypt in June, in the summer, after the uprisings, and I was looking for a way to become more involved in what's happening, and it's not very easy to find a way to be involved when you're an ethnomusicologist during a revolution. Upon returning to the Bay Area, I went to an Ethiopian concert, and I realized that we've never been exposed to this culture in Egypt. I grew up there, and you don't really get in touch with Ethiopian culture, even though they are river neighbors. I felt that there could be some value to this cultural contact, and that music could facilitate this conversation, get people to become a little bit more curious about each other, about their neighbors, and about the river that they share.
Was there music that arose out of the Arab Spring during the conflicts there? Did that create music that you were able to hear?
Oh, definitely. I think the Arab Spring, or the 2011 in Egypt, was a year of renaissance, musical renaissance that I haven't seen during my lifetime. There was a burst of creativity, not just musical, but artistic in general and literary. And we are still seeing some of the products from this era. The square itself was as much of a political conversation as it was an artistic and musical conversation.
So were you aware of the water issue at that time?
I knew little about the water issue. I knew that there was a water conflict brewing between Ethiopia and Egypt. I knew about Ethiopia looking to build the largest hydroelectric dam in Africa on the Blue Nile that supplies about 85% of the water that Egypt and Sudan receive. So I could see that once these news hit Egypt and Sudan, they will definitely trigger survival reactions from these people that rely on this water for their survival, and that this could not really yield the type of constructive conversation you need to have an environment of cooperation and trust.
So just to help us place the geography, the Blue Nile is a tributary of the Nile River, right? And can you help us kind of understand what the various countries are in that part of the world, and the way that they work together or often don't work together to share this resource?
Definitely. The Blue Nile starts in Ethiopia in Lake Tana, and then it flows into Sudan. And from there, it meets the White Nile that's coming from Lake Victoria. Lake Victoria is surrounded by Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, and there are some tributaries that come from the Democratic Republic of Congo, from Rwanda and Burundi. It flows into Uganda, into South Sudan, and it meets the Blue Nile in Khartoum, the capital of Sudan. And then it flows into Nubia and empties in the Mediterranean after it goes through Egypt.
So we all learn that the Nile is the world's longest river, and I know there's some question about whether it's longer or the Amazon is longer or what have you. But one thing that we don't necessarily know unless we've seen it is that the Nile is very thin. It's not a broad river at all.
You're right. The Nile is much skinnier than the Amazon. It has less than 13% of the water in the Amazon. And with 11 countries, 11 riparians, I think there are about 8 countries sharing the Amazon. There is more complexity to working together, to finding coordination mechanisms that would allow these countries to have a resilient infrastructure to respond to this water scarcity, to respond to environmental degradation, population growth, climate change. So we've faced a lot of these challenges over the last 20 years, as many of these countries are either gaining their sovereignty. We've had Sudan splitting into South Sudan as well. So there are many actors, there are many priorities. These countries live in very diverse realities. Some have a lot of water, some have very little, some have more energy than others. So while upstream countries are looking to develop their infrastructure and their access to energy and food, downstream countries are more worried about the water. And this dialogue needs to happen not just on the governmental level, but also on the civil society, the private sector, and many other levels, so that there is this resilient infrastructure that we need to respond to modernity.
And a complete cultural difference between some of the countries on the Nile.
Definitely, incredibly different, and culturally isolated, I would say. So more than the diversity, because the diversity exists even within some of these countries. We're talking about hundreds of languages in Ethiopia alone. This is the cradle of humankind. It's primarily tribal societies in these parts of the world, so they speak profoundly different languages. But also they don't think of themselves as part of the same region, because we've grown to think of Africa into North and Sub-Saharan Africa, so we split Africa laterally. And the Nile challenges that geography. It kind of cuts across many of these regions.
So Ethiopia announced plans to build this dam. And what was the response in Egypt?
Well, it wasn't very positive, of course, because partly because there is a lot of concern on how this dam will control some of this water. Partly also because there is very little understanding of the root challenges around water issues in the Nile Basin in general. Many of the farmers in Egypt have depended on this water for their livelihoods. And if you have a politician telling them, you know, Ethiopia is going to be responsible for this lack of water, it just triggers survival mechanisms. Then it does not really... it becomes a hydropolitical argument about whose water it is, rather than what are the problems that we're trying to solve and how can we cooperate to solve these problems.
So that's where your project comes in. You're trying to bridge some of those gaps with music. Can you talk about what your goals are and how you began to put this group together?
Sure. I mean, the music for us is it does two things. It drives this environmental curiosity and this cultural curiosity about one's neighbors. You see these musicians on stage in a collective collaborating to create music that is that combines many of these musical elements. You can't help but become more interested in the cultures that these musicians represent. So there is this model of change going with this music driving curiosity, but there is also a model for the kinds of collaborations we'd like to see among citizens from these countries. If musicians have found a way to collaborate to contribute to a solution to this cultural isolation, maybe journalists can help with constructive journalism across the basin. Maybe educators could help get people to understand the issues better. So we're trying to model this through the music, but also we don't want to stop at the performance. We want this music to be a springboard for the kinds of dialogues, the kinds of seminars and awareness campaigns that need to happen for citizens to see how they fit into this big puzzle, how what they happen to be doing can contribute directly to water sustainability in the basin. So we have a university program for students to do similar collaborations around water and food solutions in the basin. And we also have a collaborative network that includes scholars working on collaborative research, as well as other people that can be involved.
How did you find the musicians?
We started with a scout trip in 2012, where we met many of these musicians build the seed for the collective. So the first residency we had in 2013 had 18 musicians. And every year since then, we've had an online call for applications where many new musicians would apply. We've asked people, so we get some word of mouth. Some of it requires a little bit of ethnomusicological field work. So it's been collection of different ways to find the musicians we have.
But they speak different languages. A lot of them come from different musical cultures, use instruments that may not be known in the other countries. What's the trick of putting this all together into something that sounds like a band?
I think that's where the rubber hits the road. I mean, it can all sound really good on paper, but unless the music that comes out is coherent and is compelling, there'll be a different project. I think part of it is giving the musicians room to learn about one another, to teach one another about their musical traditions, and to give them enough of a clear vision for what we're trying to do, but give them also the freedom and autonomy to, you know, drive the creative process themselves, and allow everyone to be on the same level. So it's non-hierarchical. There is not one musical leader. Everyone in the group is encouraged to compose music, to arrange music, to perform different instruments, to sing, and it becomes more of a lab that allows everyone to grow musically as much as contribute to others' growth.
How do you overcome the language barrier?
We have different techniques, and you can never find enough techniques to overcome language barriers. But we sit in certain ways so that people translate for others. We have many people that speak Arabic from Egypt and Sudan, but we have a cluster of Amharic speakers from Ethiopia and Eritrea. We have a cluster of Swahili speakers, and sometimes we have Kinyarwanda and Kirundi speakers from Burundi and from Rwanda as well.
And you bring all these folks together, I understand, into a workshop-type setting where they try to exchange information. Can you talk about how that works?
Exactly. I mean, so we have two types of workshops. We have the gathering, the creative residency, where they create the music together. And this usually takes place somewhere around the Nile Basin for 2 weeks every year. And then we have the workshops where we visit the universities and we conduct performances like the one we're doing in NC State. And we have many workshops that deal with many of the issues surrounding this water conflict. So we talk about our musical collaboration and how it symbolizes the water cooperation we'd like to see. We talk about the Nile and African identity and race relations, environmental justice issues. We talk about the role of women in driving the water sustainability in the Nile Basin. We talk about the Nile and religions and the way it has featured in the different religions in the Nile Basin. We just had a panel about Nile stories and the myth that these different cultures have developed around this river to make sense of this river. So as you can see, it's very diverse. We get into very different fields. And in this way, we can engage different populations on campus that have different interests and see how they relate to this artistic work that we're presenting.
Yeah, you're going to be at NC State. And in fact, you're touring several colleges in North Carolina and also the Southeast. Why are you centering on college campuses? What are you finding there?
We're finding everything on college campuses. We're finding people that are young enough to be hopeful and to be ambitious to solve some of these problems. We're finding the people that will be dealing with many of these challenges in the coming decades. We're also finding people that are looking for these exchanges, for for this cultural contact with different parts of the world. And we're finding a platform that allows for this kind of research, for these kinds of collaborations to take place. This is not something we could find in any other environment.
You've got the water conflicts there, but it seems like that's just a symptom of much larger geopolitical and systemic problems in that part of the world. You have poverty, you have illiteracy, you have health issues. Can you unravel the water disputes without unraveling all of these other issues that plague those nations along the Nile?
Definitely not. I mean, water is really at the heart of many of these issues. And in a way, when you look at the splitting of Sudan and South Sudan, when you look at many of the uprisings that are happening, you know, there are demonstrations in Ethiopia and Sudan and Egypt and many other places. And many scholars have attributed the Arab Spring to environmental issues. And we see every day how integral water sustainability is to the political developments in these countries. So it's a perfect multidisciplinary problem to allow everyone to be involved and everyone to have a voice at the table.
What surprised you the most after you've gotten this group together?
I think the power that this music has had on changing paradigms and getting people to think differently has been pretty powerful. I mean, this was the theory of change. This was the idea for the project, but we didn't really imagine that it would strike such a deep chord when we started performing in the Nile Basin to these audiences. It really brings out something that we haven't seen before.
Is it a civil conversation, you know, with these deep political differences and cultural differences? Have there been any issues that you've run about, even with the members of your group or people in the audience, where they're not particularly ready for a calm conversation about these issues?
You know, it's different every time, and that's what's really refreshing about it. You know, one time we play in Aswan in Egypt, and the Nubians are reflecting about their experience with the Nile and the building of the high dam in the south of Egypt. We play in Ethiopia, and there is a lot of conversation around the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. But sometimes the conversation is about young people looking for their sense of identity for, you know, are we Arab? Are we African? What does it mean? And there are many other conversations that come out. So it's exciting because we're always learning something new and we're always tapping into something different.
I'm talking about a cross-cultural musical collaboration called the Nile Project today on The State of Things. You've been in North Carolina now for a few days. What kind of response are you getting to your message?
Incredible. It's been a very special segment of this tour. We started touring in January, and we started in Atlanta, not far away from here. But the residency we've had here in North Carolina State University has definitely been the most ambitious by far. We have participated in a Water Resources Research Institute conference. We have performed already one concert, and we have visited many classrooms. And the campus here has been very, very receptive, thanks to the presenters at NC State Live, who have done an incredible job bringing many facets of the project into the different enclaves on campus that, you know, are usually in silos. So kudos to NC State.
And you've met with some of the river keepers here in North Carolina who tend the Neuse River and some of the other rivers, especially down east. Have you found that the kind of water issues that you've found on the Nile are sometimes found in the United States as well?
I think we have very different realities. We had a panel at this Water Resources Research Institute about river stories, and many of these river keepers were telling their stories about how they discovered their relationships with their rivers in North Carolina. While the issues are universal and very integral to human experience, I was a bit envious. I felt like, you know, as much as people keep complaining about water issues, there's so much happening here that's incredible. I hope one day we have as many river keepers in the Nile Basin. I hope one day we have as many events and festivals that engage the local populations. I hope we have the watershed network that you have here in North Carolina. There are 17 river basins in the state, and I think North Carolina is doing a lot of things that we could learn from.
Now, we're going to hear some music from the Nile Project in just a minute, but tell us first, where do you see this project going? Where do you hope it will go?
Well, with the longest river in the world and all the problems we have there, I hope it stays in the Nile Basin as much as possible. We have so much more to do. But I hope we can see how this network that we're building in the United States can be engaged in some of these issues and continue these conversations and collaborations on the academic level, but also on the civil society level.
Mina Gurgis, the founder and CEO of the Nile Project. He's also an Egyptian ethnomusicologist. Mina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you again.
You can find out more about the project at our website, stateofthings.org. And as we mentioned just ahead, the Nile Project will perform here live in the studio. Stay with us on The State of Things. This is The State of Things. I'm Adam Hochberg, in for Frank Stacio. What happens when you combine Nubian percussion, Sudanese vocals, and throw in an Egyptian cane flute? Those are just a few of the many sounds that emanate from the Nile Project. They're a collective of musicians from different countries along the Nile Basin, and they're in North Carolina this week giving performances and hosting conversations about the water conflicts that are a way of life in countries that border the Nile. As part of their residence at North Carolina State University, the Nile Project will play a free show at 5:30 Tuesday evening, March 21st, on NC State Stafford Commons. Seven musicians from the Greater Nile Project now join me in the studio. They are Adel Miha of Egypt on vocals and percussion, Salib Fawzi from Egypt on vocals, Asiya Madani of Sudan on vocals, Salamnish Zemini of Ethiopia on vocals, Nader El-Shayer of Egypt on Qawwali flute, Ibrahim Fanous of Eritrea on vocals, and Kasiva Mutawa of Kenya on percussion and vocals. Welcome all of you to The State of Things.
Thank you.
Kasiva, tell us a bit about the group that's with us today. What instruments do you have with us?
We have the Egyptian tabla from Egypt. We have the Qawwali flute from Egypt. And we have Ohangla drums from Kenya. And, of course, a bunch of vocals from all these countries.
And all of these vocals are in different languages, or most of them are in different languages. How does that come together?
Well, we teach each other our various languages. We teach each other how to sing lyrics in different languages. My Egyptian brothers have taught me a little bit of Arabic. And I, of course, teach them a little bit of Swahili and like that.
Now, you're originally from Eritrea. First, tell us something about Eritrea.
I'm from Kenya.
You're from Kenya. Okay.
Yeah, Ibrahim Fanous is
Ibrahim,
from
I'm sorry. Eritrea. Ibrahim, you're from Eritrea. Can you tell us a bit, first tell us a bit about your country?
Yeah, I'm from Eritrea. Eritrea is a small country. People like 4-5 million, 6 million now.
And what instrument do you have with us to play?
I play krar. This is the traditional instrument in Eritrea.
Can you describe it a bit?
Yeah, it's a 6-string, and it's looking like a guitar. It's very traditional instrument, but the one with me is a modern krar, not like the old one.
So, Kasiva, you've prepared a song for us today. Tell us a bit about what we're going to hear.
So we're going to play Dingi Dingi. Dingi Dingi is an old Egyptian song. It was composed by an Egyptian composer called Said, and he basically put the Nile River in a context of a human body. Before, Egypt and Sudan were one country. And when they were separated, he talked about, you know, the Nile being a body and not being able to function well. If you cut off the body, like the upper part is not going to be able to function with the legs or the hands and, you know. So, yeah, so Dingi Dingi is it's full of percussion from Egypt and Ohanglas from Kenya. And you're going to be hearing the Qawwali flute on this piece, too.
Okay, the Nile Project with Dingi Dingi.
Dingi dingi dingi, dingi dingi dingi, dingi dingi dingi.
Sudan, بحر النيل راسه في ناحية رجلي. نان ديون تنتي ولا قول مريت اصفيحنا فغرنا مسكو يا عبي املاح ذهب نهبتي يا اخل نان ديون تنتي ولا قول مريت اصفيحنا فغرنا مسكو يا عبي نايا جنجيري جيري جيري
Mavutano tuache tujumuike ni pamoja Mgawano mgawano suluhisho la kijanga hili nini mama Mavutano mavutano tuache tujumuike ni pamoja Inaya shingirikirikiri
Nile Project performing their song Dingy Dingy. Very nice. Kasivo, we can only fit seven of you in the studio here today, but we wanted to give our audience a taste of what the whole group sounds like. So we have a recording of a song. Is it Inganji? Am I pronouncing that right?
Inganji.
Inganji. Tell us about that.
So Inganji is a song from our Rwandese composer, Sophie Nzaisenga, and it features a Rwandese zither called the Inanga. And this song, Inganji means victory. And it basically talks about a hero who goes out to war and is being welcomed back to the community and is full of praise to this hero.
And this is an original composition?
It is an original composition composed by Sophie.
Okay, Inganji from the Nile Project's latest album. Thank you.
gutinya ngutwara biri rwa mudahomba ukicumura ibuzo rugamba gukira urigira ingomba mubiri
That's the sound of Nganji from the Nile Project's latest album, Jinja. I'm talking with musicians from countries along the Nile Basin today on The State of Things. Kasiva, apart from the music, your group holds conversations about what's going on in the Nile Basin. How much did you know about that issue when you first became involved?
I didn't know a lot about issues affecting the Nile River before I joined the project, but now, I mean, I feel a sense of belonging and I have more understanding about these issues.
So you hold those conversations in schools, you've been in North Carolina talking to university groups. What message do you spread?
We basically want to start people talking about issues affecting the Nile River. We want to get people to start having these relationships that trigger these conversations. And we don't sing about the river. We make music together. We collaborate. We make these instruments to speak to each other as a model for people to see what is possible with human beings or with citizens along the Nile River coming together to have this conversation. So that is what we encourage.
And have you seen any results from that?
Yes, back home, back in the Nile River Basin. I mean, when we go to these respective countries and play there, the reception is very good. I didn't know anything about Egyptian music and Ethiopian music before coming into the project. And I think this goes to many Kenyans as well. Many Kenyans don't listen to music from Ethiopia, Egypt, you could say Eritrea as well. But when we went to Kenya and we did a concert there, I mean, I saw so many people enjoying it. So many people came out to support. And this shows you something positive is being done somewhere.
Let me just ask you about your own instrument there. You play a traditional drum, the ohangla.
Ohangla, yes.
Ohangla.
Yes.
Tell me about the drum and also tell me about how you tune that drum.
All right. So the ohangla drums are traditional drums from the western part of Kenya where near the Lake Victoria. It's a little town called Kisumu. And they're made from recycled cans. And the heads of the drums are made of cow hide. And tuning them, well, basically you have to heat them either by placing them in the sun or by a fire. But since I can't light fires everywhere here in the U.S., I use a little stove that we carry with us. So it's an electric stove, so no hazards. And sometimes, I mean, the weather is too dry. If the weather is like too cold, I mean, they tune up really much. So to get them to go down, you have to pour a little bit of water on them. Yeah.
And you have to do that by ear?
Yes, by ear. I sort of have my own tuning thing in my head. So I just tune them by ear, yes.
Well, Kasiva Mutua of Kenya, thank you for coming.
Sure.
Thank all of you from the Nile Project for being on The State of Things today. The Nile Project will play a free show at 5:30 Tuesday evening, March 21st, at NC State Stafford Commons. Seven musicians from the Nile Project joined me in the studio again. Thanks for being here. The State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, Laura Palizer, and Jennifer Brooklyn. Robin Copley is our technical director, and Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Adam Hochberg.